Well, good evening. We have to be really careful what we identify with. Conversation earlier, before we started our sit, about the nature of mental health. I suggested that we were all sick. That was what happens when we are born into this world. We are diseased. So Buddha, when he says, you know, life is suffering, he also says there's an end to suffering. So that's what we're concerned with. So the reason I say we have to be careful what we identify with. So much of our experience is put on us. We look at our backpack, stuff that we carry with us. We carry our mothers and our fathers and other beings and community and school and things that we've experienced in our lives as though that's who we are. One of the fundamental things about our practice and what I love about Zen is you are not this. That is not who you are. Then what are you? Who are you? Takes that sword of wisdom and cuts right through our ignorance. Nonetheless, we have a backpack. All of us have one. We all have our history, our karma, our habitual tendencies, our default ways of dealing with stress or handling things. And when we're not identified with them, then we can change how we operate in our lives, in our families, in our work, in all of it. Buddha's Eightfold Path is about that. You know, it's about correct understanding, correct livelihood, etc. Those things come about by not identifying with these views of life. Early on, as we develop into adults, one of the stages we have to go through is identification with an idea of self. So we come in with this big question, who are we? And then we go through our lives adapting and bringing things in. This is who I am. This is who I am. This is what I'm not. This is, you know, and as we do that, there are things put on us, other people's views, their own projections. So we talk a lot about projections. So labels, projections, when we sit, and we recognize that we're not our thoughts. I am not what I think. Emotions come and go. There has not been a storm that has lasted forever. Every storm, every dark cloud has always dissipated. The sun has always shone through. When we can be patient, when we can be resolute about understanding that this is not what we are, who we are. And just have that beginner's mind, have that view that we are clear like space, non-dual, part of everything. Nothing is missing, nothing is lacking. This view doesn't come from this external experience of adapting to this and that. This and that is empty. It's all empty. It's not real, but we make it real. We identify with it as what we are. So many different ways we've talked about it. The mirage. Where can I quench my thirst? Right here, nowhere else. and what is right here. Dive a little deeper. It's not that. No, it's not that either. Dive a little deeper. However, a word of caution is be careful, because from my own experience, you can get to a place where you think you got it, but your backpack is still there. So deny it, and next thing you know, it's running your life. You're not running your life. The whole idea of reincarnation in Buddhism is about admitting to having this backpack, this karma, this thing that we're carrying in this life, and recognizing that the work we have to do evolves around this backpack. This is our work. This is our karma. So each one of us is unique and different, and we have these beautiful aspects, and we have these other aspects that are habitual, and you could call them negative, you know, aspects of our being that are not likable. The anger that we carry, the addictions, the avoidance, the things that we try not to deal with, that we don't want to see in our own, in the nature of our backpack, if you will. It's that identification again. So freedom is not getting rid of the backpack. Freedom is knowing what's in the backpack and not being attached to it. And working to lighten the load. Slowly, carefully work at lightening the load by recognizing, oh, that's not it either. That's not who I am either. About us all being in it together, we can recognize ourselves in each other. So asking the question, how can I help, for example, enables us to be there for someone, recognizing ourselves in the other. That enables them to trust in themselves and see themselves as they actually are. That you have someone in your life who you can depend on, that you know is there for you. What, that's it. I mean, there's no more wealth than that. That's the wealthiest thing that you could have in this world, is knowing you can rely on someone. And when you ask the question, how can I help? You make yourself available for someone to rely on you, to be there. What does that mean? That doesn't mean you're going to try to fix them. Doesn't mean you're going to try to make them better. None of that. Those are all projections. Those are all ideas. It's about accepting what they already are, seeing their Buddha nature, or your Buddha nature, or the Buddha nature reflected. Nothing to add to it, nothing to take away. Suffering in the world is the separation, is the idea that something is missing, incomplete, not loved, not cared for. So whether it's someone in your family or just some strange person that you share a moment with, by letting them know, hello in there, I see you. That moment is worth all the money in the world. That's what it's all about. Because we all have these moments where we don't get it, where we're lost in the desert, so to speak, of our own making. And when somebody sees past that for who we actually are, then that's like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. So Sangha, you know, being there for each other in whatever way we're capable of, it's essential. It's what has to happen, because we are all diseased. And the only way out of it is to help each other. It's like that famous story, the the difference between heaven and hell, right? What's the difference? Both of them have big, gigantic utensils that you can't feed yourself with. Hell is where you keep struggling to try to feed yourself with them. And heaven is where you're feeding each other. It's the same. The scenario is the same. One works and one doesn't. It's the only difference between heaven and hell. I look over my own life and I see all the ways that my dis-ease was being expressed and all the people in my life that were there at the right time to help me along, to see it, to see myself. Because nobody can save you, right? We all know that. You have to save yourself, right? You have to understand yourself, own nature. You have to understand what's working you, why you are the way you are. And eventually, you know, stop identifying with all those labels. It's a little tricky for us in Zen because we're not here to work in duality. We're coming at it from non-duality, from not to. We're not trying to fix duality, you see. It doesn't exist, it's empty. That's what I've been thinking about, is how we help each other by just being present to each other. Really present, not judgmental, not trying to fix us. Just being there, just being present. You know, karmically, all the things I've done in my life to screw things up. But I think when you really understand, you recognize that in all of us. We all do that. We all screw up. But there's something that holds it all together that's beyond all that. That's the part you have to put in the front driver's seat, you know, rather than the guilt or the anger. So we have all these expedient means in our Buddhist practices to do that, to put what's correct in front rather than what's incorrect in front. I love this practice. Sungsan Sunim, you know, he just did this, I mentioned it on Sunday. It's a YouTube video from his 90-day retreat. One of the things he said was that there aren't very many people who really stick it out with Zen, that have really committed to it. You know, they show up for a while and they play and then they go. It was an interesting thing to say. And I look at it from my perspective, it's what saved my life. Zen coming into my life saved my life. And it's my way of giving back. So I'm like saying, you know, there's nothing else for me. And it's not even the label Zen, you see, because that's just the label again, because there's so many different people that interpret Zen in different ways. They all have their own take on it. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about what you can't put a label on. We all have that. And you can't put a label on it. That's why we do what we do. That's why sitting in Zazen is so wonderful. When you sit properly and you really let go of all that stuff, what's left? Well, I mean, I recognize the difficulty. It's confounding because on one hand, everybody recognizes that everybody's different. You can't just, you know, diagnose everything the same way and give the same medication for the same, because it doesn't work. Well, why doesn't it work? There's a certain aspect of the approach that I think is really healing and important. And that's what I was hinting at about being there. Being there is more important than the pills you're giving out. There's something there that touches on a whole other level. Not that medications aren't necessary and important at all. I'm not disputing any of that, but there's also a lot of, you know, mismedicating, making it worse. I mean, there's all these other things, you know? And so each one of us, no matter what our role is in life, can benefit from this practice or something similar that gets at the root of, you know, what's going on here, paying attention, having a mind that's clear like space, being able to see things as they actually are, not making them up, not projecting on them, you know, that essence of seeing things the way they actually are. That's quite difficult when you're projecting and identifying with label after label after label. It's, you know, it's a difficult task. It's all circling around this whole idea of, you know, mental health and suffering and what our lives are about. And so, all right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.